Welcome to A Counselor's Journey to Private Practice. I'm your host, Juan, and this podcast teaches mental health professionals to cultivate curiosity and build ambition in their journey to starting, growing, and scaling a private practice. Let's dive into the episode. Hey guys, welcome to A Counselor's Journey to Private Practice. I am here with Vanessa. She's a lot of things. She's a writer, a podcaster, a clinician. She wears a lot of hats in her life. Thank you for being here, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me, Juan. I appreciate it.
So, you know, the audience here, it's counselors on their journey. Counselors looking to not make all the mistakes that we make. Counselors looking at passive income, looking at how to build successful practices so that they can have a beautiful life. They could be at the beach relaxing. Tell me about your journey. How did you get started? And I really want you to be here to share your nuggets with the audience.
So how did I end up like becoming a clinician, basically? Is that what you mean? So I was actually thinking about this more recently because I used to, when people ask me a question like this, used to tell people, especially in interviews like this, like, oh, you know, the few years that led up to me going to graduate school and thereafter kind of inspired that. But when I, you know, recently was talking to an in-law and I was thinking back about my growing up, I realized that unconsciously my childhood had everything and my young adulthood had everything to do with how I ended up in the behavioral healthcare industry. And so basically, I normally don't share this because a lot of people have so much judgment about, you know, preconceptions. And so people are going to think whatever they want. But, you know, growing up, I had multiple family members, including my own parents, that were addicted to drugs and or alcohol. Of course, people consider alcohol a drug, whatever, but you get the drift. Anyways, and it really destroyed their lives. It destroyed any kind of healthy relationships they could have had, employment opportunities in many cases, just quality of life overall. In some cases, health, although my relatives are ridiculously healthy, it seems like, no matter what. Anyways, and stuff like that. And so, you know, early on, they did the DARE program back in the day, which has been heavily criticized now, but it was very effective with me. It really got the point across. And so I stay away from drugs and alcohol pretty much altogether for the most part, you know what I mean? No drugs for sure. But because of what I saw growing up and how I saw it affect people firsthand, it really, like, really, that was really ingrained into me. And so unconsciously, that is what I believe now looking back of, you know, hindsight being 2020, what led up to me doing this work where, you know, I've worked in the mental health industry and worked with people who have had a lot of addiction type issues with substances and on and on. And I've done, you know, non-addiction counseling as well. But I just see it from a different perspective, I think. And even though I haven't had drug and alcohol issues myself personally to that extent, I can comprehend, you know, how it affects families and people's lives in all these different aspects. And especially once it gets very advanced, you know what I mean? Because people can keep up the appearance for a long time. So anyway, so I think that's what led up to it. And also as a young adult, you know, many people come from dysfunctional families. Most people do now. Yes. And it's the exception if you have the hallmark family, not the rule. And so, you know, I didn't have, and most people don't have the education about healthy relationships and boundaries and enforcing boundaries and what a boundary even is. I'm pretty obsessed with boundaries and things like that. And so, you know, as a young adult, I really struggled in my own relationships and whatnot. And so, you know, through the years, through life experience, now I'm in my early 30s now, through the education I've had, it's really benefited me in my relationships, and it's kind of come full circle, all of these things. And so that's what led up to me being in this line of work, ultimately. I think that's what it was, even though it wasn't a conscious thing. It wasn't like, I'm going to grow up and be a therapist, because I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what led up to it.
I love that. I love stories. I'm a big story guy. I think it helps, you know, those we serve get to know us beyond I do CBT or I've got a master's or a doctorate degree.
Like, what's that?
Yeah, exactly. No one's up at 3 in the morning.
Who cares?
Yeah, yeah. So I forget who said this, but they were like, no one's up at 3 in the morning going, ah, oh, my life is just not doing really well. And now I could use some CBT, right? your story that you shared, how does that connect to the work that you do as a writer, as a podcaster?
You know, I'm not really quite sure, to be completely frank with you. You know, my writing, I've focused a lot on writing about health and wellness since around, I don't know, after I got out of the Army, probably around 2013, roughly. And, you know, for me, I just like to share what I feel to be useful, helpful knowledge with everyone and their mother, because I think it makes the world a better place. When it comes to podcasting, I absolutely love podcasts. I love watching videos like this one. I enjoy that. And so I like being a part of that world. And I really love the world, the good things about the internet, because there's a lot of bad things, but the good things, which are about how, you know, back in the day, it used to be if you wanted to be on any kind of media, communicate through any kind of medium, you had to pitch yourself these large corporations for years and years. There's a lot of people that are deprived of opportunities that had a lot of great things to share. But now, because of the world we live in, people, everyday people can share everyday things and parts of their lives and their talents and their gifts that you couldn't share before. And so I really appreciate podcasting as well as other forms of communication mediums to really creatively express oneself and to provide knowledge and valuable information to other people. And that give and take, I mean, I listen to podcasts all the time, and so it's kind of like a little bit of giving back as well. Yeah. I don't know, I just love it.
You have this like innovative style to you and this creativity, also a lot of drive. I think clinicians out there, they go to school, they get their master's or their doctorate degree, they know their stuff, they know how to help someone with anger, they know how to help someone that has anxiety and hand tremors. But then you did something different. You started writing books. You put yourself out there doing a podcast. Where did that drive come from?
You know, it was natural. I really wouldn't consider it. I mean, I don't even know if I consider it a drive. I mean, obviously there's a motivation of some kind. I went after I got out of the Army, you know, a lot of people talk about traveling the world, but they don't ever do it. Or maybe, you know, it's a kind of an escape to think about it, but they don't do it. Or they have a preconceived notion about what that'd be like, but they don't do it. I don't think traveling is that glamorous, to be completely honest with you, not unless you're like a queen over in Europe and like you're on that private jet or whatever. But after I got out of the Army, I went backpacking across Western Europe for about a month alone. And I was married at the time, but I went along because he was in the Army still doing his thing. And, you know, it was just like, oh, wow. You know, of course, this was like before Instagram became a big thing. And, you know, I live life in the moment a lot. I'm not really recording everything like a big reality TV show. But looking back, I was like, oh, that'd be really cool if I could like share this or that. And that led me to writing my first health and wellness book, which was like about food and about travel and all this kind of stuff. And I focus on more of a plant-based diet. You know, I eat fish sometimes. So it was about that. So that's really what started that. Okay. And then that just kind of evolved because I really enjoyed the craft of the writing. I got better at it since I've deleted like all my old books and stuff like that. Cause they were just like such garbage. I look back, I'm like, wow, that was terrible. I've gotten so much better since then. You know what I mean? Like I've grown so much since then. And so, basically just enjoying kind of the process of doing the work and getting better and using the technology and software that's now available in the world to do these things. And, you know, I'm no perfect person, but, you know, I just enjoy that. Mm-hmm. It brings me joy. It brings me joy to share things. And, you know, maybe some people like it. Maybe some people won't. When you put yourself out there, that's a risk. You know, not everyone's going to love what you do. This I can tell you for sure. And I think that cripples a lot of clinicians because they tend to be introverts. I am as well. And they're too afraid to even dip their toe in the water. Right. And I know people like that. They want to have my podcast. They're really great, but they're like, no, like they're just so scared. You think I'm like going to imprison them or something. You know, I talk about this, you know, they're terrified because they're scared of what people will think or how they'll be perceived or whatever. And that is a real risk. You know, that is a real risk, but, I guess you have to have the motivation to overcome that.
Yeah, absolutely. Has writing and being a podcaster, has that helped in like a marketing asset?
And what are you talking about, my practice?
Exactly, yeah, in your practice.
I don't think so, honestly, because I'm not really facing out to prospective clients. Like, for example, the book I currently have about burnout, self-care for behavioral health clinicians, second edition now, that's for like licensed clinicians. Okay. That's not for a client, a prospective client or anyone out there that, I mean, they wouldn't have no interest in that just based on title alone. As far as the podcasting, I mean, I think many people probably could get something out of that, depending on which topic. Right now, I've been doing 90 Fiance quick hitters because there's so much to work with in the world of behavioral health in that show lately. I don't know if you've been watching it, but like, it's like so much material to work with about relationships and boundaries and all that. But really when I was, as far as prospective clients, people would find out about me from, the internet, Google searches, website, their lawyer, because a lot of the people I've worked with historically have had, criminal issues in the court system, family, legal issues in the court system. You know, I'm trying to think of how people found about me. I think those were like the main ways, really. Yeah, that's probably how the most people found out about me. Google business listing, like in the community when I had a physical office, because mm-hmm. you're anchored there. It's like if people search certain keywords, then certain things are going to come up. And I was like one of those. So that's how. But yeah, I think it depends on what you're writing and how you're like, who your audience is, as to whether or not they'll benefit your practice. For example, Kevin Peterson, he's a licensed marriage family therapist, and he recently wrote a book called Chronic Hope: Parenting the Addicted Child. And the book's been really well received. It has like 26 overall 5-star reviews right now, which is incredibly amazing. Like, I guess he's got really good, I don't know. It has landed very well. Good for him. Awesome. Bravo. Well, that would be more of a book I perceive, and he's even been on my podcast Unravel talking about it. I'll give you the links after, so you can put in your description here awesome. For people to click and check out. But that is definitely something more for, I think, a prospective client, right? And yes. So I think that would probably be more effective in reaching, if you're looking to market your services, in reaching people potentially that you may want or maybe in your local area to work with, as well as people all over the place that you can't work with. So anyways, I think that would probably be more of the way. I really haven't felt inspired to write those kinds of books mm-hmm. at all. I just haven't. My stuff has been more towards licensed clinicians and kind of tools and resources for them that I think I would have found helpful and beneficial.
Yeah. And, you know, the audience here, the majority are going to be licensed clinicians. That one you did on burnout, I heard a little bit of your episode with mm-hmm. Gordon Brewer, and on there you talked about the sweatshop. Is that right?
Mental health sweatshops.
Yeah. And I started laughing. I was walking, yeah. I was hiking yes. with my kids, and they looked yes. at me and they're like, "Why are you laughing, Daddy?"
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
"You wouldn't get it, but it's a struggle."
Yeah, what did you think of that, huh?
You know, I thought you hit it. What is the English phrase? The nail on the head or the hammer?
Yeah,
that
you got it the first time. Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, so basically, that term came to mind during some work that I did at one point, and I had a coworker that had some other phrases that they used as well to describe that. And you know, they came to mind as I was grinding away, you know, and I really, just for anyone who decides to get that book, just FYI, y'all, like, I'm very direct. You know, you may or may not appreciate the style. So make sure you read that description before you buy the book. So if you're put off, you will not get it. But you know, there is just a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse in like the Medicaid system. I've learned nationwide. It used to be a lot worse than what it is. I've heard from people that have been in this industry way longer than me. I've heard just crazy stories of things that happened years ago. However, I don't know why it is the way it is, but I just have noticed that certain places, certain people, in certain situations are just focusing exclusively on Medicaid or whatever other monies they can get their hands on. Now, I'm not talking about your typical managed care organizations with insurances. I'm talking about government monies in particular, like Medicaid and then like other like grant money in the state that I was practicing in that was very short term and supposed to help certain populations. And I don't know like what the deal is. I don't understand even after being in the industry for this long, but they were really just kind of exploiting the dollars in a negative kind of way I was seeing. And I've heard terrible things now from my peers in different states across the country, specifically about Medicaid. And so it seems to attract a certain audience. And like me, like I wouldn't even consider taking, because it seems like there's so much red tape, so many regulations, and like so many people checking in and they're like, oh, like all this stuff, like I don't know how you comply with it. Yeah, it seems like people still find a way to negatively exploit it and really provide low quality services and make millions in the process. Right. I don't know how. But, you know, that's kind of the thing I was seeing. And, you know, managed care organizations as a whole, many of them are driving prices down for reimbursements mm-hmm. and driving requiring more output, but less, they're giving less input. And so that automatically decreases quality of services, no matter how you slice it, and causes a lot of problems, a lot of potential burnout and stuff like that. And so that's what I've seen across the industry, you know, for people that are, you know, in a private practice or working for others that are in an agency setting or whatever. And so, you know, I touch upon that briefly in the book, and yeah, and the mental health sweatshop thing, that's kind of where that came from, was is seeing stuff like that.
I think you're absolutely right. My experience with it, you know, relates very much to that. And I had one of the best supervisors in a setting like that, and they hit burnout in their mid-30s. And he transitioned to a new career. I think what I normally hear is that people get phenomenal clinical experience. You know, they get to work with at-risk cases, et cetera. But then they get detrimental mental health experience where they get burnt out. You know, they're just exhausted. And then whenever they're looking for that leap to go to private practice, they can't do it. So I'm glad that you spoke about that.
Are you saying they can't do it because of burnout, or they can't do it for some other reason?
Because of burnout. Yeah. Just being so mentally exhausted. And then, as you said, you know, while you're in there, most of them are not making enough money to put to the side to transition out. You go through so much red tape. It's structured in a way where it's almost like it's meant for reimbursements for the companies versus providers.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I could probably go hours on this subject.
Yeah. And it's like, obviously not all employers are like this, but you know, I can't speak for all states. I've heard a lot of things from a lot of my peers in a lot of different states. So I know it's not just one state, but like, you know, I graduated and worked for a bit in North Carolina. I have got a lot of good experience, even though it was tough. And, you know, what I've noticed is basically the opportunities that are better that aren't like what we're talking about are reserved for people with more experience and have all the licenses and have all the credentials. And so when you're fresh out of school, which can go on for years due to licensing requirements, I just saw like people being at the mercy of whoever would hire them. And the people that hired them were like the mental health sweatshops. And it's like, and it just the exploitation of these newly licensed people that are just so idealistic and are being thrown into these really difficult circumstances. And then you have all this turnover, typically 6 months, you know, and that's not good for clients. Right. No. And so just seeing stuff like that. You know, Melissa, I forget how I say her last name, Melissa, she was talking about, I think she's in Rhode Island, if I'm not mistaken, about when she graduated, about the same kind of experience. And she was like, and what kind of experience is that? Is that for someone who just graduated that's new to the field, you know? And it really is like asking for people to burn out the field and never come back. Just like nurses, it's been historically known for a long time now that after 5 years, they burn out never to return. And I'm not a nurse. I haven't been a nurse. But, you know, it kind of reminds me, it's reminiscent of that a little bit, you know, seeing that kind of trend. And you know, it's tough.
It is. I'm glad you're doing the work that you're doing. You know, clinicians, we need help. You know, we need help as far as what else can we do? What are other opportunities? How do I engage in self-care? And it's awesome to have someone like you that's, you know, providing that platform.
Yeah, I try, because I think it's a real problem when in this, you know, behavioral healthcare, there's a lot of emphasis on, you know, in social work in particular, on advocating for everybody else and taking care of everyone else and make sure everyone else's mental health needs are met and making sure the funding's there and on and on and on. And it's like, okay, what about the social worker? What about the behavioral health clinician?
Yeah.
Whether you're a nurse that's, you know, providing mental health care or a licensed mental health, you know, counselor of some kind, whatever. What about them? Because it's like their mental health care and their well-being and their ability to take care of themselves every single day at work, as well as outside of work, matters. Yes. And, you know, our work life matters. It affects us. It just does. So, you know, I think that there's a lack of attention being paid to that in really practical, meaningful ways. And I think there's a lack of advocacy. And I touch upon that in the book in a really passionate way for mental health clinicians. You know, we need advocates too. Like, we need to be our own advocates. We need help advocating for ourselves, not just everyone else, you know? So, yeah.
I think you've got a great movement. It takes me back to even graduate school. Right now, I'm hopefully finishing up a doctorate, and the messages that you're saying, I mean, they're accurate. It's, you know, counselor, clinician, mental health professional, advocate. What are you doing to help others? What are you doing to serve others? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like to use the mom scenario. If the mom is exhausted, then she can't support her kids as much as she loves them as she wants to. Mm-hmm. If mm-hmm. by Friday she is just tired, she's going to be mm-hmm. giving them 50%. And that's not fair to the kids, not fair to her.
No, I agree. And the systems, like the healthcare industry right now, in my opinion, is not very sustainable with the systems and the regulations and everything in place. And with the whole right now coronavirus outbreak that we've got going on, there's a big shift to talking about telehealth and telebehavioral healthcare and you know, executive order being signed. So the Department of, I think it was Human Services, if not mistaken, or mm-hmm. Health Services, something like that, can override state regulations so that people can get the care they need across state lines. But it's just like, to me, I just think that if we could just ease up on the regulations and nationalize things with the streamlining of credentialism of all kinds that you are required to have in order to practice, not only would it serve the client's interests better, but it will serve the healthcare professional's interest in all ways possible, so people could move across states or for whatever the reason, and that would be smooth and seamless. And, you know, I think what is missed in the industry is that what is good for healthcare providers is also good for clients. Yes. This is not one side of the coin or the other, okay? You know, and oftentimes by disempowering, disenfranchising, making it harder for healthcare providers, you're making it harder for clients to get care, you know?
Yeah. You this is a topic that I would love to like dig so deep into with you, and I could tell how passionate you are about it. Before we close off today, are there any closing notes that you want to share? I want to give you space to do that.
Sure. So I'm going to share a couple of other things that I want to mention for people that are interested in like creative ways to work outside or inside of the behavioral healthcare industry, maybe outside of what they're doing right now. So I got some telebehavioral healthcare training from a woman named Dr. Molly Mayhew. She has a website called telehealth.org. She collaborates with a lot of other professionals on like MDs and lawyers and stuff like that. And she's a licensed psychologist, and I'll make sure you have the website so people can click on it and check it out. And she also speaks at events all across the country. And so that is, you know, something to kind of look at, convince maybe not to do the same thing, but to inspire you to like just see what other clinicians are doing with their skill set. Because in my opinion, it's all about if you want to branch out and do more about what your interests are and where your skill set are, and they have to intersect and meet the market demand, right? And so if you're, you know, don't really know what your interests are, kind of focusing more on that, that'll help prevent burnout, in my opinion, and help kind of ease that. And then also, if your skills aren't there, then trying to see what kind of knowledge, skills, abilities you need to like get them there so that you can have an intersection and do more of the work that maybe you enjoy doing or would enjoy doing. Ernesto Sigismundo, he's a licensed marriage family therapist. He was on my podcast Unraveled once, and I'll give you the link for that. And he's created conferences in exotic locations such as Kauai, an island located in the Central Pacific. And his latest conference that just wrapped up provides some continuing education credits. And that has been very successful, it looks like, and really beautiful and pretty glamorous looking. So that's definitely something that's unconventional. The conference looked like it was really large, very large.
Awesome.
And then he also does, he owns filmit.com, where he helps our peers market their services through videography and social media. That's definitely really unique, and I'll give you all the links for that. But those are some different examples of different things people are doing, and the whole point of sharing that today is just so that maybe you can check out these things and inspire you to think like, you know, like what kind of things have I enjoyed doing in the past, or would I enjoy doing in the future, or how could I use my skills in a different kind of way maybe that would bring more joy to my life and help serve other people as well in a way that I didn't previously consider.
Nice. You know, Ernesto, I remember when I got out of graduate school, he did an episode, I think, with Jill Sanek at Practice of the Practice, going into like the importance of getting on video and, you know, building away from that stage fear, if you will. But that's one of the things that I love about having you on here and just sitting back and getting to see you in your element, hearing what you're saying, is that you have this beautiful story. You know, you've shared how as a mental health professional, you've been able to leverage writing. You've been able to leverage podcasting. You've been able to build a connection with Ernesto, right? Who's a pretty big figure, you know, in our space. And then having them on your podcast. And I love that because people just coming out of graduate school, you know, in essence, they have the basic skills that we do. You know, they read a lot of the same mental health books, CBT, DBT. You know, they're able to help someone through empathy, through compassion. It's looking at, you know, how do I develop that mindset that Vanessa has? How do I look at life in that manner?
Yeah. And, you know, I am very critical of higher education. I have multiple degrees and credentials and whatever, because I think there's just way too many gaps and it's way too rigid. And, you know, they have these accrediting bodies and stuff like this for our degrees. And I think that is problematic, though, because it's like everyone, no matter what school you're going to, is getting the same like curriculum, same basic curriculum. And it's too rigid to, because of all the requirements, to really insert in a lot of other things. Like, I think that there needs to be like a whole class on how to read policies, regulations, and contracts. There needs to be
versus sign here.
Yeah. Oh, you know, there's like three classes on that in a whole semester. You know, there needs to be a semester on all different types of classes that are really relevant to stuff that we've been talking about, because, you know, this is all stuff that I just figured out. You know, I didn't take a class on this, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I, you know, it's a real disservice, the higher education system.
Well, that's why we're on here. That's why we're sharing this. That's why we're laughing, because we've been like, man, I've screwed up. I fell down too many times. So all of you listening, don't fall down. Don't make the same mistakes. Vanessa, if people want to connect with you, if someone wants to continue to pick your brain and receive some help, receive some feedback, how can they connect with you?
So right now I'm on Instagram. I'm not trying to promote any social media. You know, I'm there for now. Hopefully they'll change any more policies they do. I might be off of there. But anyways, that's at GoVanessaLack. I also have a website right now, therapistassets.com, also known as VanessaLackShop.com. So I'm there. I'm on YouTube. Just look up my name. I'm there. So yeah, I'm out there. That's for sure. I'm out there in the interwebs. So, nice. You know, if you look me up, you'll find me eventually. It won't take long.
All right. Well, perfect. I'll have all that in the show notes, so you guys are able to check it out. Thank you for being here, Vanessa. Thank you for sharing space with me.
Thank you.
In your journey of private practice, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. Please leave an awesome review and share this podcast with any counselor you think is working towards starting, growing, and scaling a counseling practice. Let's grow together in our journey. I'll see you in the next episode.